Good afternoon, sir. Now, what, before we officially get started, what is your name, sir?
Luna, 9208.
Okay, he can ask for that information in just a moment. Mr. Luna, so please just hang on as the Honorable David Neal, the Honorable Mr. Neal, is going to conduct your hearing. I think I need to make one phone call if I'm reading this correct. So let me make this phone call, and then I'm going to turn it over to the Honorable Mr. David Neal, sir. So just hang on, sir.
Okay.
Hi, you've reached Sandy, and I'm unavailable. Please read your name, your number, a brief message. Tell me your call, and I'll get back to you. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. This is the Arizona Board of Executive Clinicians. I'm understanding that you wish to participate in the hearing for Mr. Joe Luna this afternoon, his parole hearing. If you get this message, let's say within the next 10 or 15 minutes, would you be kind enough to call our office? And that is 602-542-5656. 602-542-5656. Thank you so very much. Well, for those who are present, as well as Mr. Luna, we're ready to begin the hearing, and I'm going to turn it over to the Honorable Mr. David Neal.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. So, Mr. Luna, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, we've been having off and on audio problems. For your information, since you can't see the gallery, there are some supporters here for you today. There's all sorts of people here on the side of the victim. Alright, so for the record, would you please state your full name and your ABC number, please?
Joe Anthony Luna, 98208.
Thank you, sir. Can we go over some information here about your sentence, the offense that got you there, and some general information like that? As I go through it, tell me if you hear something that you think is incorrect. Okay? So you're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency this afternoon in reference to a parole hearing. I want to introduce the board members that will be present for the hearing at this time. On the screen to your far left is the Honorable Michael Johnson. Then we have the Honorable Gail Rittenhouse. Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright is in the middle. He's our board chairman. All the way to the right is the Honorable Louis Canonis. My name is David Neal. I'll be hearing with you today. So you're currently 45 years old, sir?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so I'm going to read some information here, and like I said, if you hear something that you think is incorrect, let me know. Mr. Luna is serving a life sentence for first-degree murder, which began on June 15, 1992. His sentence is as a result of a plea agreement. Also, he has a consecutive sentence of 21 years for kidnapping, which is also from the offense. While he was incarcerated, Mr. Luna escaped and was subsequently convicted of escape in the second degree and given a two-year sentence, which is to run consecutive to the first two charges. So the way with the life sentence, the way that is there's two consecutive sentences. This hearing would be for the possibility of moving to the 21-year sentence. In the meantime, the life sentence is running in the background, and there would not be any release even if the parole was granted at this time. So you've been before the board one previous occasion, and you were denied at that time. You're certified for this hearing, which is a parole to your next consecutive sentence or after the discharge on February 14, 2019. So I'm going to go over the offense. So on June 12, 1992, you, the victim, and a co-defendant went to the movies in the victim's car. Later, you returned to the co-defendant's house where your car was. You left again. You were with the victim in her car, and your co-defendant drove your truck. You also took a gun with you. You drove up on Mount Lemmon somewhere, and apparently, the information in the packet is what I'm basing this on. I wasn't there, so I'm not sure if this is the way it happened or a different way, but according to the pre-sentence report, once you got to Mount Lemmon and stopped, apparently you used your co-defendant's gun and shot the victim once in the head while she was sitting in the passenger seat with her feet out. After they go back, she was loaded back into the car and both vehicles drove downhill. And apparently the victim regained some consciousness and started to struggle. He pulled the car over the side and the co-defendant decided that something needed to be done. So now it was all unclear as to whether the first time he pulled over when he drove to another location, but ultimately the victim was shot several times by the co-defendant. Her body was left there, but the scene was apparently tried to, the two defendants apparently tried to clean up the scene to a point where the tire tracks and things like that wouldn't be traceable, and so the police would be able to track them down. Then, over the next day or two, after you had left before any arrests were made, apparently members of your family took the truck to buy tires and had the truck, or originally the truck, had it locked and cleaned, which was to help cover up the murder. And as a brief, that's the brief summary of what happened, the offense that got you in prison.
May I try to get the call in again, sir?
Okay.
If you can give me just one moment, we'll see if it'll work.
Trying to reach does not accept calls from numbers with caller ID blocked. Please unblock your number by dialing *82 and try your call again.
We're sorry. It is not necessary to dial a 1 or...
Yes, ma'am. Ms. Einstein, you wish to participate in the hearing for Mr. Luna this afternoon. Am I correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Well, thank you so very much. And we're glad now that we're able to tie you in. And we just started the hearing, and the Honorable Mr. David Neal is conducting it at this time. So please just hold on.
Okay, I'm going to put you on speaker.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Welcome, ma'am. When the appropriate time comes around, I'll give you an opportunity to address the board, okay?
Yes, sir.
All righty. Okay, so back to you, Mr. Newman. So, as after the investigation, and apparently you pled guilty to keep the death penalty off the table, but after the plea agreement, there's a pre-sentence investigation, and in speaking to the pre-sentence investigator, you insisted that your co-defendant did all the shooting, and you didn't do any of it, okay? So is that still your contention, sir, is that your co-defendant did all the actual shooting?
As far as my version from not guilty to guilty in in my conversations regarding the plea agreement, and also indicated the same thing was actually was considered sufficient again.
Okay, well, I was going by the pre-sentence report. You spoke to an investigator that he goes around and talks to you, and he could talk to you and talk to different investigators and look up your social history and all that. So that's what the pre-sentence investigation is, and that's we rely on that very heavily when we're trying to do the Reader's Digest version of all of this.
Okay. I thought you were going on to the plea agreement as far as the expression of guilty.
Well, no. I'm just asking you, at the time of the after you had agreed to plead guilty, during the pre-sentence report, because you gave your plea agreement and signed it when there was another date to actually, for the judge to say, well, you know, you're going to get this sentence and that sentence. Okay, and during that time, there's the investigation, and you spoke with an investigator. And that's what you told him at the time, is that you didn't do any of the shooting. And my question is simply, do you still say that the co-defendant actually did the shooting and you were just there?
Well, in the allocution, yes. That I also indicated that in my allocution regarding the plea agreement.
Okay. So that's because the official version is that you shot her the first time. And then he shot her the next time you stopped to make sure she was dead, and he did all the shooting at that time. So the victim was not your wife, but she was the mother of a child, correct, of yours?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And I know there was a contention that there was somewhere in there that said over $50, but prior to the murder, she was trying to get you to go to Superior Court with her because she was trying to get some child support set, correct?
No, that was actually for an agreement to have the grandparents take up the responsibility so they can get insurance for medical and dental. They have no mention regarding money. I don't know where that came from.
Okay. Well, we get back it, and there's information in it, and it's not always 100% accurate, that's why initially I told you to hear something that's not correct, let me know, and we'll talk about it. So, but she was the mother of your child. She had a baby by you. Okay. And then she wasn't your wife. So, let's see. Actually, at the time of this, you really didn't have any criminal history, and which for the type of crime it was, that's actually kind of unusual. Most people who were involved in that kind of stuff have some kind of criminal history, but you didn't. That's very good, actually. It's a shame that it had to start with something as severe as a murder. You've had no discipline in the last 5 years, and you haven't had much since you've been incarcerated. That's also very good. Moderate programming. I'm going to ask you this, and this isn't a court of law. We can't retry it. We won't change any verdicts or anything else like that. So, did you plan on taking her out somewhere and murdering her?
To my allocution, when I actually pled guilty to my allocution, I actually gave a brief description regarding that, but I did notify them that I had no prior knowledge that was actually supposed to occur. The only reason why we had the other vehicle in the first place was because JD didn't want this other guy in the same vehicle as us. That's one of the reasons why we picked up the other vehicle, but whenever you have the indication of going in, grabbing a gun after we were supposed to pick up the other vehicle, I had no knowledge that the rental was supposed to be obtained, but whatever he actually indicated to Floyd Hamilton at that time, I read that in the paperwork.
Okay, well, so if it wasn't premeditated, why, and she didn't want him in the vehicle with you, why did the three of you go up on Mount Lemmon?
They were going off of my discretion. They were going off of Mr. Miller's
Okay, but where did you go? Didn't you go up on Mount Lemmon somewhere and stop?
Yeah, okay. That's correct.
And so she was sitting in the passenger seat with her feet out, and he just locked up and shot her for no reason.
Well, see, that's the part that I never indicated as far as the way that occurred, but through the conversation that the investigators had with Mr. Miller at that time, he had the indication. I guess they came up to saying that I had the gun, and I actually completed that, or I did that first shot or something. But then also, the last time I was here at the parole board, I indicated that if you actually read into Mr. Miller's statement regarding that he had to the detectives, so the detectives would pick up that information to bits and pieces, and that he was, every time that we got to that first part of it, he always mentioned chase, not follow, in terms of their description of it was some type of plan that we had to murder or something that night.
Okay, well, why did you go up on Mount Lemmon?
Well, that's the thing as far as we're going up to Mount Lemmon, we just had plans on just partying. We didn't have plans on killing or anything like that. At least with me, I didn't.
Okay.
But I realized I was also 18 years old, too, so going up to Mount Lemmon or Madera Canyon or Pina Blanca or something like that, I mean, that was all part of the stuff that we used to do back then.
Well, yeah, I know. That's why I asked you why you went up on Mount Lemmon. So, you're saying that when you went up there, you had no idea he had a gun, you had no idea that it was going to be a murder, and so you just were there when it happened.
I was sitting in the vehicle with Jenny. I had no clue as far as what he was doing or wasn't doing.
Okay, but you're standing there talking, and that's what it was. You're kind of talking in circles around a direct answer. And
well, see, you're going off of the paperwork. I'm going off of what I'm trying to express towards what was the reason behind this. I have no clue as far as what was the reason in Mr. Miller's mind as far as me being able to obtain that through the paperwork itself.
Okay,
I never had a conversation with him.
All right, well, what I'm asking you, okay, is I got information from what was supposed to be a conversation with you by the pre-sentence investigator, okay? That's where that information comes that I had. But I'm asking you, okay? Because at that time you told him that you didn't shoot her at all. So what I'm saying is you went up on Mount Lemmon and just a party and you had no idea that this was going to happen. You just were there. Okay, so once he shot her and you had no idea this was coming or anything else like that, why didn't you drive your car down the mountain until she woke up and started flailing around and stuff, and then you guys got to him, she was shot four or five more times to make sure she was dead?
My statement, the reason why I jumped to the vehicle in the same car that she was in was to get medical attention, but then they won't have that on the description unless you actually read Mr. Miller's statement.
But that still doesn't answer the question. If you're going to get medical attention, he shot her once, and then right there in the same spot he shot her again, and you left the car there. But you're contradicting yourself, sir. Okay.
All right.
So you know, I mean, you're trying to play semantics with what I'm saying, and that's not going to work.
I mean, I'm playing with you. I ain't playing semantics. If you actually read the paperwork, you can understand what Mr. Miller had said or didn't say according to the detectives. But through a conversation with me, I was not the trigger guy. I had no plan on killing anyone. And by the time I jumped in the vehicle after she was shot, that's what I'm saying. There was no following to another location.
Well, you stopped. If he shot her five or six times that first time, right? You guys were there partying, and you had no idea what was going on, and he shot her five or six times. He shot her all the way down.
I thought I answered that.
Huh?
I thought I answered that already.
No, you didn't, because you told me two different things. And I'm asking you, simple question, sir. Mr. Lerner, sir, simple question. Was she or was she not shot all those times
in one spot.
No, not in one spot.
Okay, all right. Now, don't try to play semantics and you ain't about to think. I'm asking you a very simple question.
Okay, so this would
have happened. You got in the car. Okay, I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions for you. Mr. Canales.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Neal. Mr. Newman, I have a question. I'll try to keep it simple. And were you there when she was shot?
Yes, I was.
Okay. How did you feel after that?
I was fine. I was the one who was fine. I was trying to get something done for her.
Okay. And you stated that you were trying to get her to medical attention?
I was, but from the indication how who had expressed that was through Donald Miller's conversation with the people, he was trying to indicate he was trying to do that.
Okay. If I'm not mistaken, she never made it to medical attention, correct?
Exactly.
Okay, why not?
Well, once we got down the road about Lehman and on that straightaway, Mr. Miller came in front of our vehicle, which was I was in the Honda with Jay, and he was in the Nissan, which is my vehicle. He come right in front of us, ran off the road, and he took back control of Jay. And that's where we had the indication of those other shots. We didn't have an impression going straight over there and then that was a shot, but see, what they didn't seem to understand is that we were cut off from the time from Mount Lemon where we sped off and he was mentioning a chase, and we were actually cut off and he took control of Jenny again.
Okay, he took control of her, but she was, and I'm sorry, I keep saying she was, I don't mean to be cold towards the victims' representatives in the room. But I will still say the victim was left behind, correct?
Well, during that time, me and her were still communicating, yes, but she was left behind, and that's why I'm saying that I came in and I felt responsible. I know I was responsible for that.
So, in your mind, what was the motive for killing the victim?
I have no clue. I know in terms of, we're actually describing it as like a money issue or just child custody battle. That's not what it was. But see, in terms of speaking this way right here, I'm always speaking in reference. I mean, as far as the victim's family, they would actually understand regarding what was that whole conversation regarding the legal document regarding for the child that was being done before all this other stuff happened. I haven't been able to obtain that copy of that, nor I actually went to Mr. Uncle's to try to locate that itself because it was never attached to a case file. But then they were standing indicating that some type of $50 thing was being seeked or something like that, but then through the specifications for Jenny's name on there, on that legal document, it would actually show what she was actually requesting. And it had no reference to money indicating whatsoever.
So, in short, you don't know why the victim was shot.
I can actually go off of that statement if you like and then have an impression as far as saying that, okay, I agree with that, but then yet, if we understand through my allocution and stuff, that's what we're going off of, saying that it was sufficient for me to plead guilty regarding my involvement, and I gave them my participation of my involvement regarding when I allocated and changed it guilty.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lord. I have no further questions.
Mr. Johnson?
So I'm just listening and sitting here and reading some of it, just really trying to get an understanding. You guys went to the movies, and then you went and you drove to the location where she was shot in two separate vehicles. Why were you guys in two separate vehicles? Why was the other gentleman even there?
Well,
so I'm trying to get an understanding of what happened that evening. Can you, did you guys go to the movies?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and then after the movies, you guys drove up to the location where she was shot at?
Yeah.
Did the other person that did the shooting, did he go to the movies with you? Go ahead, sir, I'm sorry. So the other person went to the movies with you?
Yeah.
So what was the purpose of you guys going to the location where she was shot at?
Just to keep the night going.
And so he was by himself and you were with your the mother of your child?
That's correct.
Okay. So did an argument or something come up there or what happened?
I have no clue, but okay. Regarding for me getting this information through that, I referred to Tony Hamilton and Donald Miller when he actually went in to get the gun at his house when we were actually supposed to get him and the other vehicle.
So did you leave and you left in the other vehicle with the other gentleman, is that right?
No, I was in the same vehicle with Jenny. I was in the whole time.
So when you left her there, you left her in her vehicle by herself?
At which time, sir?
After she had been shot.
No, I actually drove in the same vehicle with her.
You drove there, well, after she was shot, what did you do?
Well, that's when I jumped in the vehicle and stayed away, left Mr. Miller and my vehicle behind.
Okay. And where did you go to from there?
Well, I got as far as the wrong straightaway, like miles down the road, once we were already off the mountain. Right. But he caught up to us.
And then what happened?
That's when he got ran out the road.
And then you got ran off the road, and what happened then?
He took control of the vehicle.
Okay. All right, thank you, sir.
He's written off the other Dr. Ray.
No, sir, I don't have any at this time, sir.
Thank you, sir. Okay, sir. At this time, we're going to allow your supporters that wish to speak on your behalf, and then we'll listen to the victim side of what's going on. So, I believe we have a lady coming now. While she's coming up, how many people wish to speak on behalf of Mr. Reed?
The rest had to leave. They had to school and work.
Okay, so just your gentleman's going to speak?
Yes. I want to give these
up here. Remember, we can't give them back to you.
No.
Okay, we can take them.
He's made.
Okay, we can take them. Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Margarina Nunez. Anthony is my son. I'm 71 years old. Most of that has been supporting him. He has been true, remained true to himself, to what he believes in, to his education, to doing right by the rules that are expected of him. I don't like the idea that we were accused of covering up anything. We were not even aware. And then now you read a statement saying that the family tried to cover it up by buying tire. None of us were involved in it. And I don't appreciate it. He has tried to live by what is expected of him. What he's trying to tell you is that they went to the movies, they argued, they went back to the house, her house, or Miller's house. She didn't want Miller in the car with her. Miller took his truck. They went up to Mount Lemmon to park. That's where Miller shot her. He tried to get her to medical attention. Miller chased him in the truck, ran him off the road in the desert, and that's where he finished shooting her. He was aware of it. He was there. We had nothing to do with covering up anything. He did not, this was not an issue of $50 a month. And it's not fair that they implicate the family in trying to cover it up. I'm going to stay by him. I'm going to remain by him. He has seen me through cancer, through open heart surgeries, and there's nothing he can do about it. But he has remained true to himself and what's right. By his jacket, you will see that he has remained following the rules and doing what is expected of him. Because that's how I raised him. That's how I taught him to be, to respect people. And I don't appreciate being implicated. Thank you.
Any questions?
Yes, I have a question.
Sure.
What do you think happened after the body was discarded in the desert?
I have no idea, because he has no idea.
Well, we're on here. He knows that there was a shooting. He knows that she was shot. He knows this. The body was still in the desert. What do you think he did after that?
I wasn't even in town. I lived in Tombstone.
I'm not implicating you, by the way. All I'm saying is it doesn't make sense to me at all. And I'll follow up with Mr. Luna in a moment.
Okay.
But
the family had no participation in any cover-up.
I'm not asking about a cover-up. I'm trying to understand why the victim was left unattended to. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyone else wish to speak on Mr. Luna's behalf? No one else? Okay, so at this time, I think I'm going to defer to Mr. Oakley. Normally, he lets the victim go first.
Mr. Chairman, Sue P is a victim representative, and she has a couple of letters she'd like to read excerpts from some of the victim's family, if she could go first. And I don't know if Ms. Guder, who's on the phone, wanted to address the board or not, but I think Sue has a, Mr. P has a letter from Ms. Guder, who's on the phone as well.
Okay, Ms. Guder?
Yes.
Do you wish to address the board, or would you like the victim's advocate just to read the letters?
They can read the letters, but at the end I do have a statement I'd like to address to the clemency board.
Okay, that's fine. We'll do it in that order then. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
And excuse me, this is Mr. Guder?
Yes, sir.
It's hard to hear, Rick.
Okay, with the system we have, we try the best we can. We'll speak up a little bit more for you, okay, sir?
Yeah, I understand that. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay,
could you state your name?
Sue Dupe, up here from Tucson. Is that what you need from
yes, me? Yeah, you need to tell us what you mean.
Mr. Chairman and the members of the board, I have copies of statements that were sent, but we're not sure that you all received them. So I'd like to submit those.
Please do, yes ma'am.
And then also my husband and I took some pictures of the final resting place of Janet.
Yes ma'am.
I know that we're going to be back, so it's okay, as well as some pictures of at the cemetery. recorded yes, agenda requests. So I'd like to ask
yes, ma'am,
that
please.
Those.
We'll remember we can't return them.
True.
Okay, thank you, ma'am.
This is Jenny. It's a great picture, and my husband and myself, this is my husband Bill, DuPay, I'm Sue, we're survivors as well, and we try to help other victims, help other survivors to get through these processes. That's why we're here. I'm just going to read the entirety of the Duder statement. They put one together, and then just small snippets from other family. This is from the Duders, Sandy and Ron. Dear parole board members, once again, we are having to write to implore that you, the Quincy board, deny Joey Luna parole. After we listened to the board at the last hearing, February 14, 2018, and hearing you say that you could tell us that he does not accept any responsibility for the murder and kidnapping of our beautiful daughter, Jennifer, Jenny Ann Duder, on June 13, 1992. He always blames someone else for his actions, including the infractions committed while in prison. He has never accepted responsibility for any of his actions, even when they dated, and he sat in our living room and said it was okay for her to do things with her family and her friends. His jealousy would rear its ugly head. The weight loss from the stress he put her under, before he took control of her, she laughed and smiled, loved to do things, enjoyed playing sports, and the final year of her life, taking care of her son. Jenny loved to play with him, take him places, even though he was less than a year old. The final picture we have of her was taken on Chris's first birthday. 1 month later, to the day, she was murdered. He doesn't remember his mom. He only knows what we tell him about her. Luna doesn't care. He only wants out of prison, wants to get on the next part of his sentencing. He admitted to the charges he was arrested for, first-degree murder and kidnapping. In addition, he has another two-year sentence for his escape in 1996, a week of terror for us. Not knowing where he was for a week, if he should show up at our doorstep and murder us too. The effects that this murder and kidnapping has had on us, her parents, her brother, her son, and other family members and friends is unbearable. Our lives changed forever that day, and we will never recover. The grief and emptiness that we endure every day can only be understood by those who have also gone through this type of ordeal. Please, please, we implore you not to grant him parole. Ronald W. Guder and Sandy Guder, parents of Jennifer Ann Guder. And this is from her brother, Matt. It's just parts of it. But as I look back over the last year and reread what I conveyed just one short year ago, I realized that not much has changed in this arena. I still have not spoken to, hugged, laughed with, cried with, spent holidays with, or even spent one single second with my sister. Every wonderful event and painful moment this year has had a Jenny-shaped void. So much change, and yet emptiness and sorrow is still felt. So please read this letter. I am sure they all seem to sound the same, but that is because the pain we endure when losing a loved one in such a manner lingers on, and like a piercing light, awakens us daily with a reminder of what once was and now never will be again. Mr. Luna should have thought about the lifelong impacts his reckless and selfish decision would have on everyone left in the wake of his actions. From the time he methodically pulled the gun and shot Jenny in the head, pushed her body back in the car, and drove her more than 20 minutes to where he and Mr. Miller tore the hair out of her head and shot her 5 more times in the head while she begged and pleaded and struggled for her life. He could have changed the outcome by dragging her to a hospital for care. He never thought of changing the outcome. He never thought of anything or anyone but himself, and committed a crime that was so inconceivable that it brought an entire community to its knees with grief, heartache, and pain that is still affecting the lives of so many. Daily, we the victims of Mr. Luna's action endure the pain of reliving the events of this day, not only the loss of our dear loved one, but the callous way that she was so abruptly taken from this earth. We live with this storm cloud every birthday, holiday, and anniversary, and each time we must revisit and relive this crime through a correspondence sent to us regarding the movement and activity of Mr. Luna while he has the privilege of continuing to breathe. Let me remind you of the infractions that he has committed and been found guilty of inside the prison system. 12 infractions ranging from disobeying order, conspiracy, assault, sex acts, and escape. Yes, for a week, Mr. Luna roamed the streets of Tucson when he should have been incarcerated. This was a week of sheer hell for my family. A week where when we were treated like criminals that could not go to the bathroom without an officer peering over the privacy walls of a public school to ensure we were safe. While we understand these officers, whom we have the utmost respect for, were there to protect us, they were there for one reason and one reason only: to safeguard us from a man that had no reason to be among the public and has no reason to be given parole for a crime that he committed and pled guilty to. Please take a moment before you make a decision and read the words that I have placed in red letters. Senseless, heinous, brutal, vicious, calculated, premeditated, destructive, reckless, selfish, callous. These are words that we live with every day when we think of the murder of Jenny. We feel pain, sorrow, anger, depression, loss, and agony. Please do not add to this by allowing Mr. Luna to have a victory and be one step closer to endangering our lives or the life of anyone else. Please consider not only denying parole today, but ensuring that he does not come up for parole for the longest period allowed by law. Thank you for allowing me to provide you this letter. While it opens wounds for me to write this, it also provides me with comfort knowing that you can hear a victim's voice. And that's Matthew, her brother, who was just a little kid at the time. Then this is from her uncle, and just a little from here. Our daughter and Jenny made plans when they were old, for when they were older. This will never happen because of him. Please read what happened that day, Jenny's last on this earth. If this ever was one of your family members, would you let him out? That's Uncle Steve Vanderbest. And then the aunt, her name is Cindy Vanderbest. None of Jenny's family got to see her graduate from college, get married, have more children, or just have a happy, normal life. Joe Luna took all that away from us, and I don't feel he deserves to be paroled ever. And again, these are just little parts. This is from her cousin that was I mentioned in the previous one. We were not given a pardon from Jenny's death, It is still fresh in all of our minds what was done on that heinous day in June of 1992. They say that time heals all wounds. Well, it has not healed this one. Jenny was taken from us all too soon. She was a mother, a sister, a daughter, cousin, friend to many. Her smile was infectious and sorely missed every day from those who loved her. They say that everyone can be rehabilitated and given another chance. Well, there are some that are beyond the help that society can give them. Those are the ones that should be locked away from civilization so that something like what happened to Jenny and her family doesn't happen again, at least by Joe Luna. And this is from her best girlfriend. 26 years ago, to you is a long time ago, however, I remember these words and feeling vividly like it was yesterday. I remember Jenny telling me that Luna had killing intentions early on. He talked about killing his other girlfriend so that he and Jenny could live happily ever after. He mentioned details of what he would do. I was very scared for Jenny and often feared for her life. In the end, it was him planning Jenny's end of life. He did not care that the son they had together would not have a mother. He didn't care about anything but himself. That day that Jenny died, I was supposed to be with her. I told her I could not go. He didn't like me, as I was always telling Jenny to leave him. Was he planning on killing me too? Could I have saved her if I went? These questions go on in my head, and I think of her constantly. This is from her close girlfriend. Her name is Genevieve Hernandez. Joe solicited Donald Miller to assist him in killing her all because Jenny was asking for $50 in child support payments. Joe invited Jenny to the movies in pretense of them working things out. They shot her 6 times while she fought for her life and tried to hide under her car. Joe pled guilty and was sentenced to life. Joe, is up for parole. Not only has he shown no remorse for taking her life, he escaped from prison, resulting in a search for him. Joe took Jenny to the movies, then took her up to Mount Lemmon and shot her once. His terror did not end on Mount Lemmon. While still alive and suffering, he then transported her down the mountain to a desert area where she continued to fight for her life and was shot 5 more times. She tried to escape and attempted to take cover under her car. He then left her to die. There was one more, but I'd like to skip that one. And Jenny's dad, Ron, dealt with his pain by writing poetry. And this is just a couple of lines of how he was feeling back soon after her death. Says, "Where you're at now, I know you're at peace. If only I could feel that peace and serenity that you hold now within yourself. If only once more I could hold you in my arms and tell you how I care. This day will come when I can do just that. The pain, the hurt, the anger will be no more. My heavy heart will be lightened. My life will begin anew the day I hold you in my arms and know it is you. That's the day I know I'll be in heaven with Jesus in me." Ronald Luter, June 1994. Thank you for your...
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I got the impression, Mr. Chairman, that Ms. Guter wanted to last with that. I just have a brief statement, if I may. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and the board members. My name is Rick Unclesby. I'm with the Fulton County Attorney's Office. I was a trial prosecutor in this case, so I'm fairly familiar with the facts. I was the person that allowed Mr. Luna to plead guilty and avoid the death penalty, as Mr. Neal said. Mr. Ware, the co-defendant, was given the same option, but he chose to go to trial. He was convicted, he was sentenced to death, and after waiving some of his appeals, he was executed in 2000. Going to trial with Mr. Miller's case shed a lot of light on what happened up there. Mr. Miller confessed to the matter. He confessed that he was the one that shot Jennifer 5 times in the head after Mr. Luna had shot her once in the head up on Mount Lemmon. They did go down the mountain. They went quite some distance after they got down the mountain. If you're familiar with Tucson at all, when you get down on Catalina Highway, Houghton Road intersects that at some point in time, and then if you go further south on Houghton, that intersects a crossroad glen. Jennifer's body was found some 100 yards out into the desert after a dead end on Glen Street. This was not a situation where Mr. Miller came down and ran the car off the road with Mr. Luna and somehow took control of it. They deliberately drove out into a deserted area where Jennifer tried to escape. The evidence at the scene showed that she tried to get underneath the car that they'd driven over there, and Mr. Miller admitted shooting her 5 more times. Mr. Miller had no reason, at all, no motive to kill Jennifer. Mr. Luna was the only one that had a motive to kill her, and in fact had planned to do so even before that night. There was testimony at Mr. Miller's trial by one of Mr. Luna's friends, a person by the name of David Arias, and he's quoted in the Arizona Supreme Court opinion on Mr. Miller's case. David Arias, Luna's friend, testified that Luna asked him to help murder the victim a couple days before the murder, that the murder occurred on the night that Luna had said it would, and that Luna said that David would have an alibi through Mark. Mark was one of the nicknames that Don Miller went by. So Mr. Luna had not just engaged Mr. Miller to commit this murder, but he had tried to get one of his friends, David Arias, to commit the murder with him, who then refused, and then Mr. Miller took up the job at that point. I think Mr. Quinones asked a question about what happened after the murder and asked the mother, you know, what was going on afterwards. It wasn't for 3 more days that Mr. Miller was discovered when his roommates began to talk. The police arrested him. So even if one were to believe Mr. Luna's version of events, which I would suggest to you is simply absolutely false, but even if one were to believe that, the 3 days where he left Jennifer's body out there, was discovered the next morning, never once went to the police, never tried to get any sort of medical help. And the reason for that, of course, is that Mr. Luna wanted Jennifer dead. And the testimony at trial, again, it's referenced in the Arizona Supreme Court opinion on Mr. Miller's case. Testimony at trial was, this was over a $50 request per month from Jennifer to try to get Mr. Luna to help with some of the child care issues that when Jennifer was raising her son, Christopher. So rather than just contribute a few dollars a month to Jennifer to help care for Christopher, Mr. Luna came up with a plan to kill her instead. It is troubling that he is unable to admit any part of this. If in fact one of the goals of imprisonment is attempt to rehabilitate these folks that go there, I would suggest that Mr. Luna is far removed from any sort of rehabilitation in this case. I won't belabor the point, but Mr. Luna actively participated, he planned in the murder, he planned the murder, he took Jennifer out, he took her to Mount Lemmon, he shot her in the head, and she was thereafter shot several more times by his co-defendant. They left her body out in the desert and went on about their business and cleaned up Mr. Luna's truck. Because of his inability to admit any culpability in this case, I would suggest that he's not been rehabilitated and that parole, even to the consecutive sentence, should be denied. And I know, Mr. Mueller, you brought this up in other cases when I've been up here about what's best for the victims in terms of having to come back every 6 months or every year. And I wrestle with that question as well, and I talk to victims about that. And I don't know, it's really an individual decision that they have to make on that. But I know in speaking with the Gooders, they would rather come back every year and participate in this hearing rather than have Mr. Luna parole. But I understand your concerns about that. I share those concerns. Sometimes I think that perhaps that's best. And But with regards to Mr. Luna, because of the reasons that I've already stated, I would ask the board to deny parole to the consecutive sentence at this point. And I'm happy to answer any questions if the board might have any.
Any questions? You do such a good job.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you, sir. Mrs. Woodhouse?
Yes.
Would you or your husband like to make any statements at this time?
I would like to make a short statement stating that you may wonder why we go through this each parole hearing. Obviously, it is hard going through this each year or 6 months. But as victims of a heinous, brutal, and senseless act, we are willing to do this for our daughter, Jennifer. It hurts to reopen and rehash, but we are willing to do so for her. She deserves justice. Please do not grant parole. Please don't.
Thank you, ma'am. Would your husband like to say anything, or?
I'm sorry, I can't speak right now.
Okay, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure you had an opportunity if you wanted to.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
It's really taken a toll on both of us and my husband's health. If it weren't for that, we'd both be up there fighting for Jenny in person. But we're thankful that we have Sue and some of the other ones up there and Rick up there fighting for us. And for Jenny. It's for Jenny. People forget what we've gone through, but what we lost, what she lost.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. I want to thank you for coming in here. That's the nice thing about having the telephone is you can still participate if you can't come out of the room in Tucson.
Yeah.
I do appreciate your participation.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. So at this time, unless there's somebody else. No? Okay. Mr. Luna, we're nearing the end of your hearing. The board will be going into discussion shortly to make a determination. But before we do, we'd like to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. And if there's anything else you'd like to tell us, any new information, now would be the time to do it. We just ask that you don't repeat all the information we've already covered. Okay, so now's your opportunity, sir.
The only thing I would like to indicate is that I was 18 years old when I committed this crime. And to say that I'm not rehabilitative in some regard, I guess, would actually show the effort of what I was actually trying to do positive in a direction of what I felt was actually right. And I try to stay and maintain myself within those bounds of thinking of understanding what I felt was right. As best as I possibly can, I guess, anyways, my conversations and me speaking correctly for myself, I'm sure you can understand how it's always been difficult, even from the very beginning, even when I actually needed to express myself at that time. And it kind of like took its course the way it took its course. So I guess that's the best I can actually say as far as me that goes. But I'm trying and maintaining the best I possibly can as far as what I feel is right.
Okay, sir. We thank you for that. The board will be going into discussion now. We'll be talking amongst ourselves to make a determination. You're entitled to be able to listen to that conversation. We just ask that you remain silent, but stay on the phone. And once we're finished, I'll get back with you. Okay, sir?
Yes.
Okay, the board is now in discussion. Well, this is kind of a troubling case. I guess is a good way to put it. You know, I can commend Mr. Luna for his the programming he's been trying to take. He really doesn't have much in the way of discipline since he's been there, which is really good. But I'm really troubled with his recount of the offense. The information in the packet is based on what was gathered in the police reports from many, many witnesses, and all of the information says that it was planned, that Mr. Luna fired the first shot, and that at no time did he really seek out any kind of medical attention for the victim, nor did he report to the police. And if Mr. Miller was the bad guy as described, he still had an opportunity once he got back to town to pick up a phone, call the police, and at least tell where the body was at. And I have to say, even if he was not the shooter, even if it was all by surprise, in fact, that would be more an indication that he should have gotten medical attention for. But even that, he was there. There were two separate locations where shots were fired. Just goes way beyond an innocent bystander type thing. And so I am not in favor of granting Mr. Newman parole to his next consecutive sentence, but I'm willing to listen to a discussion from my fellow board members.
Ms. Rittenhouse. Mr. Neal, thank you. I'm still very confused about what actually happened. When you relayed the story that we read in the pre-sentence investigation to what Mr. Newman tells us. So until I can satisfy that confusion, I would not be in favor. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Duncan?
I agree. It's just kind of confusing about what had happened. And I just think there's more to it, especially that the death of his child's mother, and you had the child that's still, there's just too many things that's not matching up. But I do want to commend him for the classes that he's taken. He has taken quite a bit of classes and program that he's done since he's been incarcerated, so I do want to also acknowledge that.
Thank you. Mr.
Neal? Thank you, Mr. Neal. I agree with all my colleagues. I do want to say that I recognize, and I'm speaking for myself, sometimes questions can get a little hot. I do want to take the time to commend Mr. Luna for his behavior inside the Department of Corrections. It looks like he hasn't had discipline in 10 years, and I'm certainly not encouraging him to lash out because of very direct questions being asked of him by the board. But I am equally confused and disturbed by the accounting of the event that led to the murder of an innocent young lady. So I fundamentally agree with everyone.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Wright.
Very simple. I'm not in favor of moving him to his next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge.
Thank you, sir. Okay, so based on all the information in today's hearing, I am a matter of Joe Luna, AUC number 098208. I am moved to deny parole to next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. And with the waiver of the crime, I'm going to ask for a linear setoff.
Second.
Agreed. Motion by myself, second by Mr. Colonis, agreed by Dr. Wright, Mr. Johnson, and Ms. Rittenhouse. Release denied is 412B411. And reason, serious and violent offense, loss of human life, serious and deviant offense, trauma to the victim. Serious bodily injury because he was shot and then shot him at a second location, victim of harassment because of that situation. And I would have to say that would be it unless there's something that somebody else would like to add. Okay, thank you. Okay, Mr. Luna, the board is going to deny you parole to the next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge at this time. And you heard the reasons that I listed?
Yes.
Okay. So, we do wish you luck. Keep on the path you're on because you are doing a good job in there. But at this time, the board did not feel ready for parole to make consecutive sentence. So this will end your hearing, sir, and if you would please put the CO3 back on the phone.
Can I have an indication of something, if possible, before we end?
Pardon me, what are
can I say something before we end for the last few words?
Well,
is it possible to send you paperwork regarding what has occurred on this case?
Okay, there's no more discussion at this time, sir. Your hearing has ended. And if you would please put the CO3 back on the phone.
But you can send me
you can send anything you want to. Yes, sir, you can send paperwork.